welcome back to the Jet Press Podcast. My name is Justin Freed, and I'm joined, as always, by my man, Mike Luciano. Mike, I'm feeling good because my Wi-Fi is finally fixed, and I'm very excited about that. But, Mike, how are you doing today on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon?
I'm doing okay, despite the nonstop construction that has been going on in the room directly above my apartment. So that has been nice for the last couple of days. It's even nicer not only to hear drilling and sawing and all that, but I looked out my window and there was a giant pile of just a destroyed, almost like a kitchen set, just pieces of wood strewn about. So I had to hear that getting dropped out of the window from really high for an hour. So it's been a very noisy day right now. So let's try and calm it down by talking nonstop for an hour about the New York Jets. This is going to be a draft-heavy episode, folks, because I remember last year this was right when Aaron Rodgers got traded and there was leverage talk and DeAndre Hopkins, and it was kind of an unusual pre-draft process for the Jets. We didn't even know what picks they would end up having. We thought they would have 13 for the longest time, and then they went down to 15. But now we can just fully go into draft talk. Jets have the number 10 pick. They have a promising third-round pick, too. I mean, this is a big draft for the Jets. So before we get into what we want to do with the number 10 pick and elsewhere, you can always find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, wherever you get your podcasts. We are on all those sites. YouTube at the Jet Press. If you want to support the show just by subscribing or just by liking the stream, because both of those things are really big helps, that would be a great way to show your support. Same with leaving a good review on Apple Podcasts. That's a good way to show support. But never mind all that, Justin. Let's get into draft talk, specifically the number 10 pick, because the Jets are a contender this year, and it's very rare that contenders have top 10 picks in what is a pretty strong draft, especially offensively. I mean, this is a draft to need an offensive lineman or a wide receiver or a pass catcher. This is the draft for that. So the Jets kind of lucked out there. The Jets could go in so many different ways with this number 10 pick. I know certain picks that we'll get into, the picks that have been kind of gaining momentum, and it looks like it's going to be one of these two or three players. We'll get into that, but the flexibility that the Jets have right now to move up, to move down, to stay where they are, it's really unprecedented, because the Jets have not had a pick this good and been this good in a very long time. So what we did before the show is we kind of looked at what we would want to have happen, our big board of options, kind of, our big board of players of who we want at number 10. Of course, obviously, eschewing names like Marvin Harrison Jr., because there's no chance in hell he lasts to number 10. So eschewing that, or any of the top quarterbacks, you know, May, Daniels, Caleb Williams, eschewing that, I'm looking at number 10, and I got five players, five, that I think would be pretty home run picks for the Jets. Even though number five, we'll get into him, number five is a little bit of a reach, but I just really like him as a prospect. He is an offensive lineman, so if those of you who want a lineman, you could finally quiet down, because the Jets are finally going to get an offensive lineman. It is Troy Fatanu of Washington. That is my number five on the Jets big board, because Fatanu, he's kind of a late riser. Now, he was kind of like a fringe first-round pick for the longest time, and now he's kind of muscling his way into the even OT2 debate, because Joe Alt he's going top 10. He's going to be gone. Beyond that, it looked like it was going to be Olufoshana and Taliesi Fuaga fighting it out for the number two spot. That's not really the case anymore. J.C. Latham is really gaining momentum. Amarius Mims, the whole potential of Amarius Mims, even though he's only started 8 games in college, that could get him picked pretty high. And now Fatanu, who is a very experienced tackle. They thought he was going to be a guard originally because they didn't love his measurements, but then he measured it at the combine, hit all the tackle thresholds, and boom, he's a tackle. He's maybe the most Robert Saleh tackle in this class. Him and Fuaga are the most Robert Saleh guys, because they just play mean and nasty and aggressive, sometimes a bit too over-aggressive. That's Fatanu's problem, where sometimes you can overextend and get in bad positions. But other than that, I mean, that's something you can work on for an offensive tackle. In terms of his tape at Washington, which meant going up against a lot of NFL edge rushers, you know, Brandon Dorlus over at Oregon, Jonah Ellis over at Utah, handled him pretty well. USC has some top recruits like Corey Foreman. Like, he handled him pretty well as anybody did. Fatanu's kind of in the mid-teens, kind of early 20s right now. But if the Jets took him at 10, it might be a slight reach, but not in my eyes, especially if you want a tackle and they had him graded higher than like a Fuaga or Fashanu, I'd be thrilled. if they got Fatanu. If they trade back and get him, if they move to like 15 or 16 and get him, home run first round for Joe Douglas.
I learned today that I believe it's his name is actually pronounced Troy Fautanu, Fautanu or something
Fautanu?
Like that. Fautanu, at least according to Dane Brugler's pronunciation guide. I don't know. It says Fautanu. Okay,
we'll go and splice that pronunciation in later in editing.
I didn't even know how to pronounce Fuaga for Taliesi Fuaga for a while. But yeah, Fautanu, that's going to take a lot of getting used to. Is definitely one of the late risers in this class. And I think I'm a little higher on you or on him than even you are. I'd love if the Jets took him at 10. And I'm in the camp at this point that's like, it's a toss-up between him and Fashanu for me in a lot of ways. Mostly because I just love Fautanu's versatility. He's someone who not only do you draft and hope that maybe he can be your future left tackle, but am I crazy to say if you draft him, he's competing for your starting left guard job week one? I don't think that's a crazy thing to say. I don't think that's a crazy thing to say. He played some left guard in Washington. A lot of teams have projected him as a left guard. Obviously, you don't want another Elijah Barrett Tucker situation where you're bouncing him around between different positions. But I believe that he's somebody that absolutely can start a guard from day one in the NFL. He can start a tackle from day one in the NFL. It's probably
you don't want to just repeat an Elijah Barrett Tucker bouncing him around everywhere thing is
agreed. The feat. But look, man, Jets are trying to compete this year. They're trying to contend for a Super Bowl. You want to, it's an overused idiom at this point, but you want your best five out there. And if he's one of your best five starting offensive linemen, you want him in the starting lineup. And I think he's somebody that absolutely can compete for that left guard job. He's, like you said, I think a good word to describe his tape is like violent. He's a finisher. He is mean. He's nasty. But also, I think he held up really well in pass protection for a guy that doesn't have like the ideal length that you'd want from a left tackle. He's a great athlete, and that definitely helps. I can absolutely see him sticking a tackle in the NFL. I know some teams have projected him as a guard, but I think in this pre-draft process, he's proved that he can play tackle. I put him, so the way I did my draft board is, I explained this to you before the show, Mike. I kind of didn't do like players. I did my preferences, like, oh, they could trade down and do this, trade up and do this. So Fautanu would kind of fit in my like third preferred option, which was stay put and draft one of these guys, whether it's Latham, Fuaga, Fautanu, even Fashanu if he gets to 10. I'd be very happy if the Jets stayed put at 10 and drafted him. You could also say, look, if he's available at like 15, 16, and you have an option to trade down to that spot, it's going to depend on if there's any team that's willing to move up. But absolutely, he's someone you can consider at that point in the draft, whether it's a 10, whether it's a 15. I'm not sure he's going to even get to 20 at this point. But yeah, I think he's a really, really good prospect. And I'd be very happy with Troy Fautanu at this point in the draft.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The thing about Fautanu, too, and maybe this is why I have him ranked a little bit higher than some of the other ones. Like, I'm willing to work with a guy. I know Keith Carter is not a good coach, and the fact he's employed as an offensive line coach for this Jets team is kind of stunning. But I'm always willing to take a chance on guys that have, like, not minor technical flaws, but their athletic gifts kind of overpace where they are technically right now, because you can teach proper footwork. You could teach good hand placement. You could teach not overextending. You can't really teach being as big as he is and as fast as he is.
Yep.
I think that's where Fautanu kind of stands out here. Now, he might be a reach to some. I know Mike Kuiper's big board is going to have him in the 20s, and the Jets are going to go, oh, my God, we took a reach here. Like, don't subscribe to that. Go watch Washington's tape. He's pretty good. And the reason I know he's pretty good is because I first really caught on to him when I was watching Roma Dunze, who we'll get to later.
Yep.
But if the Jets want to take a wide receiver, they need to operate under the assumption that Dunze is not going to be there, because he might. I think it'll just be very hard, because with the Cardinals needing a receiver, if they don't trade out, if the Cardinals stay at four, which I think they will and take Harrison, the Chargers need a receiver, guy like Malik Nabers, and then Atlanta, the Bears, maybe a team who moves up. Like, there's a lot of receiver needy teams in the top 10. So because of that, I think the Jets might need to go and look at wide receiver 4, which is Brian Thomas Jr., also of LSU. And I really am confused as to why he's not like a runaway wide receiver 4. Like, to me, he is. I'm just not seeing it in the wider draft media. I'm seeing a lot of 25, 26. I feel like everybody has him going to Buffalo for some reason. But this guy, I mean, what more do you want from an athletic perspective? He's 6'3", 210. He ran a legit 4.33 40 at the combine. In terms of relative athletic score, RAS, I mean, that was a better workout than Xavier Worthy, who set the 40-yard dash record. But to run a 4.33 at that size is incredibly impressive. Now, I know he ran a very limited route tree. I don't want to call it like a Mickey Mouse offense, because there are a couple Mickey Mouse offenses in college football. Mm-hmm. The Ole Miss with Lane Kiffin, Tennessee, Baylor when Bryce Petty was there and Art Briles was there. Like, those are Mickey Mouse offenses where you're not reading the field like an NFL quarterback. It's basically just at this point, 2 seconds after you get the snap, this guy's going to be there, throw it to that area. That's not how you operate in the pros. LSU's not really like, it's got some tendencies and some like concepts that are kind of like that, but, and that limited Thomas's route tree. So that's the number one issue. And then of course the number two is, well, he had Malik Nabers on the other side, so we never got double covered. And he had Jane Daniels, Heisman winner, number two, number three overall pick, throwing him the ball. So of course he's got good numbers. I think he had 17 touchdowns or something crazy during his last year, but if you just take all that out of it and just look physically, this is a big, strong guy, great hands, great speed, vertically downfield. He's one of the best guys at tracking the ball. I think him and Adunze are the best two in that one particular area in the draft. And then when you get him the ball early on, like he's got a little wiggle. He's not going to be, you know, a Deebo Samuel kind of guy, but he can make some plays. He certainly can make some plays. I would be very happy if the Jets took Thomas at 10 if all three of them are off the board. I'm really bullish on his potential, and I think he just fits what they need, especially if Mike Williams doesn't pan out. Let's say Mike Williams is either washed because of the injuries or he gets hurt again. Well, then now you got a guy who I think stylistically is a pretty good replacement. He's not like as physical. Like, Mike Williams is probably a little bigger, but that's as good of a replacement as you're going to find in this draft if, God forbid, something happens to Mike Williams. So that's why I really love the Thomas pick.
I'd like to preface this by saying that all the realistic options that the Jets could possibly go at 10 and even if they trade down outside of like drafting Dallas Turner or whatever, I'm pretty happy with whatever the Jets end up doing. I don't dislike any of the reasonable prospects at that stage, including Brian Thomas. I'm not as high on him as you. In fact, I don't know if it's a hot take. I don't think there's a huge gap between him and Ladd McConkey. I know we'd mentioned it before the show, and I think that you disagree with that statement.
I think you're like, are you like related to Ladd McConkey?
He's my guy. He's my guy. I said it back in January. I think he's one of my guys in this class. I think he's an awesome player, and I don't think he's going to go day one, although there's a chance, but he should. Like, I think he's a day one player on my board. I haven't made a board as you have, but I think he's a really, really good player. And Brian Thomas, the issues to me aren't necessarily with what he can be in the NFL, because I think he has all the potential to be an all-pro player. I think from a physical standpoint, from a production standpoint, what he did in college, he absolutely can be that level of that caliber of player. Like maybe like even like a T. Higgins, almost a faster T. Higgins. Maybe he needs to bulk up a little bit more for that, because I think he doesn't play quite as strong as T. Higgins does at points, but I can see that comparison. The issues with me are kind of stuff that you pointed out. The limited route tree. I feel like he ran a lot of crossers, a lot of vertical routes for sure, which that, you know, it comes with the territory. They had such a stacked skill position group. He was playing opposite Malik Nabers. They didn't need him to run every single route under the, you know, in the world.
And it was a very Madden-y offense. It was a lot of deep posts and verticals and over the middle. You could tell that all these young OCs who grew up playing Madden, you could tell it's a lot of those same routes.
Yeah, and that's a red flag to me. It's not a red flag that, oh, like, I'm not going to draft this guy, but it's something to take into account. It's something to note, you know, as he goes into the NFL. I think he definitely benefited from his supporting cast. I also don't think, I mean, not that this is the be-all, end-all for a player you're drafting at 10. I didn't love the effort he showed on run blocking. I don't think he's a particularly strong blocker, and I think that is something that the Jets take into account. Probably why they were so high on Alan Lazard, aside from other reasons. Possibly why they're so high on Mike Williams, because he is also a very good run blocker. I think that's something that they might you know, take into account. With a guy like McConkie, I just think he's, and we'll probably talk about him a little bit later. I know I've talked about him a lot, but I might talk about him when we talk about our day two guys that the Jets could target. But I think I'm just more confident that he's going to be able to consistently win and separate in the NFL than I am with Brian Thomas. But I say that while fully acknowledging dude is like, he has all pro potential. He's, what is he, 6'2", 210, 215, oh, yeah. and he ran a 4.33. Like, I mean, just doing that alone, and he had like 1,700 yards in his last year at LSU, 17 or not 1,700 yards, like 1,400 yards, 17 touchdowns. Dude's got all the potential to be a great player. I just think there are some red flags that pop up with me, and they just happen to be the red flags that I usually look for with receiver prospects. Route tree and separation skills, I think, are the most translatable skills when it comes to wide receivers. And it's not to say that he can't do either of those things. I just didn't see him do it as consistently as other guys like Ladd McConkie. I think I might still have Thomas over McConkie just because I think Thomas's upside is absolutely higher than Ladd McConkie. But I think as far as like floor is concerned and in the safe prospect, I have more concerns about Thomas than I do McConkie.
I guess I'm leaning on you could teach you, run blocking is something you can teach, and effort in is something you can certainly help with. And who would be a better blocker normally? If they give the same effort, the 6'3" guy who's 210 pounds or the 6'185" when he's soaking wet guy.
You're right. I that's being hypocritical because Ladd McConkie is not a great run blocker. I'm well aware of that. I would never call that a strength of his.
A couple comments on McConkie here from the Facebook chat. Gregory Freeman, McConkie won't separate in the NFL, saying, did he do it at UGA? I mean,
yes. Yeah. He's like one of the best separators in this entire class.
Like, the appeal of McConkie is that he can separate. The reason I have more concerns about him is I just don't know how high his ceiling is. Because he's a good athlete for his size, but at that size, there's a limited amount of stuff you could do with him. That's my concern. Everybody acknowledges he's a good separator. Yes, he was injury prone, as Gregory also says in chat, but that all goes into the evaluation. I'm pretty sure he's a top 50 pick, even with the concerns.
I think McConkie is going to be a really, really, really good wide receiver too in the NFL. That's what I think he's going to be. I'm not sure I see the wide receiver one ceiling with him, but if you're telling me bank on somebody in this class, one receiver that's not like the top three guys to have a 10-year, 15-year NFL career as a reliable, productive player, it's Ladd McConkie. Like that's why I'm so high on him.
Keeping it on wide receivers, because there is just, I think, a slight miracle chance that this happens, because there's always some debates about those fringe first-round prospects and how good they're going to be. The top three receivers in this draft, Roma Dunze, Malik Nabers, Marvin Harrison Jr., in whatever order you want to put them in, typically it's Harrison, Nabers, and Adunze. I don't know where Nabers wide receiver one came from. That was really weird.
Yeah.
Like, at no point was he wide receiver one, and then he just pops up like that. But
that's how the pre-draft process is so weird, man.
This whole Drake May thing, that's why he's going to go to the Patriots and screw us. For no reason.
Don't wish that evil. Don't put
it's going to happen. Schefter pretty much said they're taking Daniels at two. The Commanders are. Brian Kelly said it too. Did you catch that?
No, I missed that. No.
He was at his pro day and at LSU's pro day, Jaden Daniels and Thomas and Nabers. And they were asking about Daniels. And he goes, yeah, he's going to go and be a great leader in the NFL, make some big plays for Washington.
I did see that. I actually did see that, yes.
So the Patriots are going to get May and screw us again. But beyond all that, I want to present this scenario to you. I think this could happen.
Okay.
So those three go 1, 2, 3. Harrison goes 4. Nabers goes 5. J.J. McCarthy goes 6. Because I think for some reason, that's the pre-draft process going crazy. The fact that J.J. McCarthy is being regarded as a first-round player number 1 and a top 10 player.
Dude, he could go ahead of May. He absolutely could go ahead of May at this point.
He shouldn't.
I agree. I 100% agree. My biggest red flag when you're talking about a quarterback is if the first like two things you're saying is, oh, he's a great leader. Like, that's like
every quote I've heard about McCarthy, none of them have been football related.
Right. And that's such a red flag.
Did you see there was one in Brugler's piece, for crying out loud, where it was like he came to Michigan and said, if you just want to go play with girls, don't come here. And that's being a leader. I'm like, are we just making up?
Right.
Zach Wilson honestly had a lot of that too.
Yeah. Wilson, like the thing about Zach Wilson, everyone's like, oh, you know, he's unshakable. Like, he's unflappable. He's, you know, he's a competitor. And
this guy got flapped more than anybody in the league.
Right. His teammates love him. He's confident. And I'm like, that is not the Zach Wilson that I've seen in the last couple of years.
He is so flappable. It's ridiculous. But so moving off that, now we're at number 7. Well, what do you know? The Titans take a guy like Joel. No Roma Dunze yet. Then there's 8 and 9, Atlanta, Chicago. Well, Atlanta says, you know what? Maybe we take the best defensive player available because we spent on Kirk Cousins. We got Drake London. We got Kyle Pitts. Let's beef up this defense. Now, Chicago at 9 says the same thing because we got DJ Moore. We got Keenan Allen. Let's take like a Jared Verse at number 9. And then what do you know? Roma Dunze's there at 10. It's unlikely, but I think there's a legitimate chance. And if a Dunze falls to 10, I legitimately feel like that's like a no-brainer. Assuming Bowers is not there, because we'll get into Bowers later, but Odunze is just, wow, is he a fantastic prospect. He might be, honestly, I mean, Harrison's the safest, but outside of that, I think he's safer than Neighbors. Tremendous hands, great route runner, good speed, great ball tracker. Mm-hmm. Like, in most other years, he's wide receiver 1 running away. I feel he just happened to have the misfortune of coming out in a year with a guy who's been the best wide receiver prospect in 10 years in Marvin Harrison Jr. If he's half his dad, he's a good receiver, and he might be more than that looking at his profile. And then Malik Nabers, who has crazy speed and tons of numbers and good route runner, like he kind of got screwed. But it could end up with him on the Jets, which I would be positively thrilled with. So much so that imagine that base offense of Garrett Wilson in the slot.
Nuts.
With Mike Williams and Roma Dunze. Don't ever say we didn't do nothing for you, Aaron Rodgers, because that's the best wide receiver core you may have had in over a decade.
Dare I say that'd be the best wide receiver trio in the NFL, if healthy. If Mike Williams is healthy and playing at what he can do, I think that's the best wide receiver trio in the NFL. I'm not sure there's a trio that would top that. Roma Dunze is an incredible player. Like, he is an awesome prospect. I think I have him a step below Harrison and Neighbors, but it's just because I think Harrison and Neighbors are two of the best wide receiver prospects maybe I've ever seen, legitimately. I just think they're unbelievable players. Dunze, like you said, in a normal draft class, is probably flirting with or the consensus wide receiver 1. It's crazy to think
last year he would have been running away.
Absolutely. In Garrett Wilson's class, he'd probably be wide receiver 1 as well. Like,
kind of. He's up there, yeah.
Because Drake London was the first receiver taken in that, and I think Roma Dunze is a better version of Drake London. Like, I think he's just a better version of Drake London. He's faster than him. The only, like, nitpicking thing I can even think of is he didn't have, like, a super diverse route tree at Washington, which, whatever, man. Like, I think it's different.
Bigger than Thomas and Neighbors.
It is bigger than Thomas and Neighbors, absolutely. And I don't see the same, like, any kind of really red flags in him. It's funny because I was just, you know, looking up his scouting report here on Brugler's draft guide. And one of the only weaknesses he points out is just 60 career snaps on special teams.
Oh, yeah, you're going to put your top 10 overall pick as a punt gunner. That makes sense. Which, if
that's a weakness for a guy that's considered a consensus top 10 pick, I don't think anybody's going to care. If Roma Dunze falls to 10, that's pretty much a best case scenario. Unless it's, you know, the best case realistic-ish scenario, because I don't think he's there at 10. I think he probably is taken before 10, but it's definitely possible. Basically, I think there's a few guys where it's no-brainer. If they somehow fall to 10, you take them. We'll ignore the quarterbacks, but if Joe Alt's there at 10, you take him. If Malik Nabers or Marvin Harrison Jr. somehow fall to 10, they're not going to.
Some sort of Laramie Tunsil incident happens.
Right, but if they're there at 10, you take them. And I think Roma Dunze is the other guy. If he's there at 10, you don't even think about it. You absolutely run to the, you know, run to the podium and draft Roma Dunze. He's an incredible player. In terms of my draft board, I wouldn't be upset if the Jets traded up to draft him. I'm dead serious. If they moved up to like 7 or 8 to draft the Dunze, gave up like whatever it would take to get there. I'm not sure. Probably maybe a future couple picks, maybe a third. I don't think they want to give up their third this year to do that, but probably future picks. I'm cool with that because I'm confident Roma Dunze is going to be a great player. And now all of a sudden you got Garrett Wilson and Roma Dunze for the next hopefully decade. And they're both phenomenal receivers.
Not to be Debbie Downer here, but the only reason I'm kind of against trading up is I'm looking at all these. I know this is for quarterbacks, but the hot rumor lately is somebody's going to trade up, probably Minnesota, to get J.J. McCarthy.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing the price that it's going for. I'm seeing like 3 firsts and or like 2 firsts and a second. But like the price for trading up is so crazy inflated. Mm. Like maybe it's different if they do it for a Dunze. I'm not necessarily sure, but because some teams know that, like Minnesota, you would be trading up for a quarterback and teams would know that. But the price for going up even 5-6 spots is multiple picks into the future, and that's a tough ask.
I don't think the Jets should be trading up to 5 or 6. Look, if the Jets traded up to 5 and drafted Marvin Harrison Jr., I'm going to love it. I'm going to think that's the best thing in the world because I don't care what you have to give up. Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to be one of the best wide receivers in football.
He's tier all his own. For Dunze, yeah. It's a different conversation.
I agree. I'm not trading up to 5 to draft Roman Dunze. But if they move up to 8, you know, move up 2 spots, I think it's different too because with a J.J. McCarthy trade up, there's going to be so much competition to try and trade up for that 1 spot, you know, because there's going to be a lot of teams looking for that quarterback. I'm not sure there's as much competition. So every pick is different. The value for every pick is different because it just depends on – you know, what the market is. But yeah, I'm in favor of them trading up as long as it's not giving up a bunch of picks for a player that I don't think they should be doing that for. But if it's Harrison, Alt, or Neighbors, give up really legitimately whatever it takes to trade up. I'm happy with that.
I want to go back to the offensive line debate because I'm actually not as big on picking an offensive lineman at 10 as a lot of Jets Twitter seems to be.
Mm.
Mostly because it seems like a lot of Jets Twitter is saying, well, you need to go draft, you know, Morgan Moses is old and hurt because he played through a shoulder thing, and Tyron Smith is old and hurt. I'm like, yeah, let's cross that bridge when we come to it.
Right.
Because there's going to be good tackles pretty much every year. There's not going to be a year with no first-round tackles in the NFL. The Jets are probably going to be able to spend some money next year. Like, that's a 2025 problem. But if you want to get one at 10, because this is a good class for tackles – I feel like Olu Fashanu is the guy that you want because Alt's going to be gone. Fashanu's kind of slid lately. Like, I remember pretty much up until like December, he was OT1. Like, it was him and Alt, and then all of a sudden, Alt overtakes him. I think part of it too is Fashanu, the measurables weren't what everybody wanted to see. Like, he has really small hands, and his hands are in a tier. This is going to sound weird, but offensive linemen with his hand size, if you look at linemen who've been picked high with that hand size, typically don't do well, which I could understand because you have to grab and move Myles Garrett, who's 275 pounds and really fast, with Kenny Pickett baby hands. So that could be a challenge. But if you want somebody who technically is very refined, who did not give up a single sack his sophomore year at Penn State, and he's handled Big Ten edge rushers, I think, fairly well. I think Fashanu is a pretty good bet. Like, actually, Gregory Freeman in chat brings up a good point where he said Becton was huge. How'd that work out? Fashanu, in a lot of ways, is kind of the opposite of Mekhi Becton in that he's a little bit smaller, a little bit more athletic, a lot more technically refined, because Becton was just pure power. Mm-hmm. And that was the only way that he was going to win. Now, with some of the offensive line moves the Jets have made, it might look a little weird to take Fashanu because he seems like a Shanahan-y kind of zone blocking guy. And it looks like they're making a transition to a lot of gap blocking. Like, cause that's what Tyron Smith was. That's what Morgan Moses was in Baltimore. Like, it seems like they're actually making, and they got rid of Laken Tomlinson. It seems like that's what they're doing. So Fashanu would be kind of an older school Jets move. But if they want somebody who's good at handling just more explosive rushers, who's a better pass blocker right now than I think a run blocker, I think Fashanu's the guy.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because I was going to say that too. I really like Fashanu, obviously, and I think it's kind of – I don't know if it's weird that he's fallen. I think teams are just kind of more enamored by, you know, the sure – like, I think Joe Alt is more of a quote-unquote sure thing than Olu Fashanu. I never really, in my mind, when I was diving in, put them in the same tier. But I think Fashanu is absolutely a great player. He's a top 15 player in this class, and he's very likely to be a top 15 pick. I'm glad you brought up the scheme fit thing, though, because the more I think about it, the more I think of guys like Fautanu and Fuaga being better fits for what the Jets are kind of doing with their offensive line, the direction that they've gone in this offseason, bringing in guys like Morgan Moses and John Simpson from Baltimore and then Tyron Smith from Dallas. They're kind of more focused on those gap power run offensive linemen than the, you know, the more athletic zone blocking guys like a Fashanu. And I think that that's just, you know, that's a change in philosophy. And I think it's going to work well for the Jets. And I think it works well with Breece Hall as well, which makes Fashanu an interesting projection to the Jets. That said, if he's there at 10 and they take him, I'm very happy with him. I'm very happy with that. I'm kind of at the point where, again, he's in a similar tier to Fautanu to me. I think I like Fautanu and Fashanu a little bit more than Fuaga, mostly because Fuaga is probably a right tackle in the NFL. I don't know if he has that left tackle versatility. At least he didn't do it at Oregon State. And I think that there are some concerns more with him with pass protection, like with Fashanu. I don't see those concerns with pass protection at all. In fact, I think he's already a very good pass protector, and I think he has the athleticism to get even better in that regard. He's still a work in progress, probably as a run blocker, which, again, is a weird-ish scheme fit for what the Jets are going for, because I think they're going for more of that power run scheme with the offensive line. But he's got the potential to be a great player in the NFL. I think he's someone who can absolutely start day one. He probably wouldn't need to be starting day one with the Jets, but you know, you mentioned it in the beginning, Tyron Smith hasn't played more than 13 games in the season since 2015. That's a decade ago, pretty much. Expecting Tyron Smith to play more than 13 games in 2024 is asking a lot. Whoever, if you draft the tackle at 10, they are almost definitely going to play. So I don't see it as a situation of, oh, you're drafting a backup. They're probably going to play more than Will McDonald did last year. So that's not a consideration to me. I like Fashanu. I like the idea of drafting a tackle. I think my preference is still wide receiver over tackle, but you can't go wrong with either one, in my opinion. I think Fashanu is one of the best options at that position, for sure.
For sure. And I think one thing that I have at least been pretty consistent on, I will say, from the get-go, is even though the Jets have a pretty good tight end duo right now with Ruckert and Tyler Conklin, I think Brock Bowers is kind of in the – Brock Bowers from Georgia, the tight end, is – in a tier almost by himself in terms of tight end prospects, so far removed that I think he is the guy that they're going to end up picking to 10. I would not hate that move for one second. This is a weak tight end class, extremely weak, I would say, mostly because there are exactly four really good prospects in this entire class. There are maybe four I would consider picking before day three. There's Ben Sinnott from Kansas State. There's Theo Johnson from Penn State, who we'll get into a little bit later, actually. Little wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Jatavion Sanders from Texas. And then Brock Bowers. Now, Bowers, I wouldn't say that he can't block. I mean, it's certainly not his forte. Like, I've seen people bring up comparisons to George Kittle a lot. Kittle's a better blocker than him. I think a better comparison might be Sam LaPorta, who had on what, like 900 yards as a rookie tight end for the Lions last year. Yeah, another Iowa guy, but I think LaPorta was not anywhere near as good a blocker as Kittle was. They'd almost make Kittle into a receiver. He was like a blocking guy. Everybody's a blocking guy at Iowa. They suck offensively, but that's where Kittle made his name, and then he became a good receiver. Bowers is not going to be a Gronk guy who's 265 and in line and blows guys away as a run block. He's just not going to do that. If you want your tight end to do that, he's not going to do that. Luckily, they have Conklin and Ruckert, who are good blockers, especially Ruckert. Maybe they make Ruckert more like a fullbacky H-back thing, and then you just let Bowers run. Because this guy is 6'4", 241 he weighed in at, which some people were concerned he'd be under 240 for a tight end, but 241, and I've said this on the podcast before, if you were just watching the tape and you did not know he was a tight end, you'd think he was a slot receiver. And you would not bat now. You go, oh, who's this 6'1", 190-pound guy? You're like, oh, man, he's 6'4 and a half, 240. He's got maybe the best footwork as a receiver for a tight end I think I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Now, Kyle Pitts is the guy he gets compared to a lot because Kyle Pitts went number four to Atlanta as a tight end. I think overall as a prospect, Pitts is better because I think he had longer arms. I think he was more vertical. I think he was probably faster, just straight line 40-yard dash. He was probably faster. But it's just really, if you can't get Brock Bowers on the field and get him involved in the passing game, like that's a you problem. That's a coordinator problem. You need to get rid of your guy because he's just such a natural progression. That's why I'm so high on Bowers, because you can make him a Tyler Conklin upgrade. You can make him a slot receiver. You could put him on the outside against cornerbacks. There's so many ways to use him. It's almost like an idiot-proof way, because there's risk with all these guys, but Bowers is as idiot-proof a first-round pick as I think you're going to find at the skill positions outside of maybe Harrison and Neighbors, that tier, as you could find in this draft. So that's why I'm so high on him. I know some people have their debates about taking a tight end that high. Like tight end, it's getting to running back levels where people are just like, don't take a tight end that high. It's like, don't take a running back that high. And I get all that, but there are exceptions. There are exceptions to these rules. Like, it's, oh, don't sign an older running back. Well, Derrick Henry's 30 and everybody wanted him. Like, there are exceptions. And I think Bowers is one of those guys.
Yeah, I agree. I also agree with Kyle Pitts being a better tight end prospect. I think a lot of people are getting caught in a moment and saying that Bowers is a better prospect, and I disagree. I think that Bowers is genuinely an outstanding athlete for his size, like one of the best most athletic tight ends we've seen in a while. And like you said, with his footwork and route running ability, I think that's an exceptional part of his game and why, even if you don't even use him a ton as an inline tight end, because his blocking is fine. I think it's passable. I think it could get better. And obviously, if you're a Georgia tight end, you have to block a little. They're not going to play you if you can't block at all at Georgia. But it's definitely not his strength. So even if you're just playing him a lot in the slot, like, he is your extra playmaker. That if you draft Brock Bowers, you can go into the year with Alan Lazard as your wide receiver 3, because he's really basically your wide receiver 4 at that point, because you have Conklin and you have Bowers. I don't know if I'd say he's idiot-proof, because I'm just thinking of a scenario. Look, I know who the Jets offensive coordinator is. The Jets offensive coordinator is Nathaniel Hackett. I can absolutely see a scenario. In fact, I'm not sure there's any tight end prospect that is idiot-proof, even like a Travis Kelce. I don't think there's any tight end prospect that's idiot-proof, as we've seen with how the Falcons have kind of misused Kyle Pitts over the last few years. I could very much see a scenario.
Did he ever close to 1,000 yards as a rookie, though, or a second year?
He did, but it's still a situation where, you know, they were throwing to Jonnu Smith a lot last year over Kyle Pitts. They were using Pitts a lot as a decoy. I'm pretty sure – who was the third tight end? Was it – Michael Pruitt, or who was it? It was some, I forget.
Michael spelled M-Y-C-O-L-E. Yeah. That's how I remember that. Yeah, but again, part of that too is he had Ritter, not Aaron Rodgers. So
Of course. And he also had, you know, Arthur Smith, who was not doing a great job with Atlanta, even though, you know, even if he did some good stuff.
Good coordinator, bad coach.
Exactly. For sure. So I don't know if I'd say that Bowers is idiot-proof. I could 100% see a scenario where the Jets draft Brock Bowers and absolutely misuse him because of who their offensive coordinator is. And, you know, I could see a scenario where they draft him and he's Tyler Conklin's backup and he's playing 30 to 35% of snaps. And I don't think that that's what you want to do with a guy you're drafting at 10 overall, especially if he's as good of a prospect as Brock Bowers. I'd love it if they drafted him because of the lack of idiot-proof stuff, and because I don't think – his ceiling is as high as the top 3 wide receivers in this class. Because of that, I like him less than those options. And honestly, if I was ranking them right now, I don't know if it's crazy to say, I think I'd prefer to have any of the top 3 receivers, of course. I think I'd probably prefer to have Olufoshanu as well, and maybe Troy Faiutanu, because I really like Faiutanu. And I think he, versatility-wise, I think he'd just be so important to that team because they're going to have injuries. Faiutanu will get on the field and he will play a lot as a rookie. I think that would be better for the Jets, because I'm also a Tyler Conklin stan. I think he's a really good player. And there's no reason you can't draft Brock Bowers and play them both. Absolutely you can, especially because Bowers doesn't even need to be playing tight end. You can just play him in a slot. That's fine. I think it restricts a little bit more of what you could do with the offense, because if he's playing a slot, you're probably not moving Garrett Wilson there. And again, I also just really like Tyler Conklin. I think Tyler Conklin is a top 10 tight end in the NFL. I believe he's top 10 over the last 2 years in receiving yards as well. And if I had to nitpick anything about Bowers' game that I think Conklin is a lot better than him at, is that I don't think like the contested catches are there with Bowers. At least last year on his tape, I didn't see it as much. He only caught 2 of his 9 contested catch opportunities via PFL.
When you get open so easily, there's not that many contested catches.
Right, but I'd like to see him be a little more dominant, you know, in those situations. And I think, obviously, again, I'm nitpicking here. He's a fantastic tight end prospect, one of the best tight end prospects we've seen in a while. I think there are elements to his game that are just like, they're not there yet, and maybe they will be there, that kind of make me – I'll say this. I would much rather Brock Bowers at like 15 than 10. One, because you trade down and you end up recouping hopefully a day 2 pick in the process. And 2, because, well, also when we're talking about financial reasons, his contract will be smaller, because if you're drafting him in the top 10, he's going to already be one of the highest paid tight ends in the NFL, which is kind of crazy to say, but I believe he'll be top 10 in cap hit if you draft him in the top 10. So that's something else to keep in mind as well. I like Bowers. I will not be upset if the Jets draft Brock Bowers. He's not my top option, but I'd be happy with him.
I'm just looking at the order. You mentioned trading down to 15. So that would be Indianapolis moving up. Honestly, right. They might take him.
They could. The Colts could absolutely trade up for Bowers.
Minnesota, Denver, probably quarterback. But in this class, I don't know if any of the top quarterbacks last that long.
I think I've seen a lot of people saying Penix is his stock is rising. And it'd be really funny.
That'd be a horrendous mistake.
It would be hilarious. Because like, and there was a point where people were talking about him as a round one guy.
Oh, and that's so foolish. No.
That's how you really feel. I love Penix, except for the red flags. Like, except for
I have him on my big board 57th.
All right. I mean, look.
Spencer Rattler in like the 70s, too. So he's closer to Rattler than he is to like Nixon McCarthy.
This is a silly statement, but if Penix was a little younger and didn't have the injury concerns, he'd be a top 10 pick. That's a dumb statement.
Yeah.
It's a dumb statement, but it is true. I love him as a player.
If this and this and this happened, I'd be dating Charlize Theron. Well,
sure.
Couple comments I want to get to before we move on to our next segment. Brian Sternbeck, when talking about using Bowers, said, Jets play colors never tend to utilize rookies. Remember when Garrett Wilson barely played in his debut game Jets can feature Lawrence Cager?
Lawrence Cager.
I actually thought he'd be – I actually liked him at Georgia. So another Georgia guy, Cager. But
Cager might be a better blocker than Bowers.
The thing about that – the thing I was concerned about last year to have taken a skill position guy is not only that, but – Aaron Rodgers, as typically, like, he expects a lot from his receivers in terms of being precise and knowing where you are. And I mean, if you don't, then you won't play and he won't throw you the ball. So I'm like, all right, I'd rather have veteran guys there. But this is before his leg blew up. So I'm like, all right, I'd rather have a veteran guy there than, you know, a rookie learning on the fly. But when you're number 10 overall, like if they were 19 overall, I think that's a different conversation. 10 is such a unique opportunity. In a draft where wide receivers are going earlier than ever and they're more valued than ever, and you need, like, unless you have Patrick Mahomes who just breaks every rule, like, you need good wide receivers to do anything in this league now. It's just the rules are tilting to that. Like, that's why I think I'm so set on taking a skill position player at 10. Like, and Gregory Freeman has been very active today in the chat. Shout out Gregory Freeman. He said if the Jets don't draft an offensive lineman in the first round, Joe Douglas should get fired, which...
Relax.
Right. Yeah, that's a little strong. But also, if they were 18, 19, and all the top guys are gone, I'm like, you know what? Take Amarius Mims, take J.C. Latham, and then just move forward with how you're doing. I'd be fine with that. Mm. But 10, that's why there's so few good skill position players that are projected to go top 10 and then just catastrophically fall. You have to get a guy who can contribute right now at number 10. This is not a wait for a long time.
Gregory responded to me saying, relax. At 14 years and running, you relax. I'm tired of this crap. Look, I get it, Gregory. I understand. I'll say this, though.
Gregory, we are the only fan-sided NFL site that has not covered a playoff game.
Yes, and that's nuts, dude.
Except us. We're with you there, man. We support you.
This site has been around since I was in like middle school or junior high. Like, that's ridiculous. That's so dumb. That's dumb. That shouldn't be the case. Wide receiver, like, I'm very happy if they go wide receiver, or, you know, we'll say playmaker because we'll throw Bowers in there. I'm very happy if they go playmaker. I'll be happy if they go offensive line. I think you could absolutely make the case, and I think I would agree with the notion that playmaker is a more pressing need, at least for the starting lineup, than offensive line, because you don't have a wide receiver three right now. Your wide receiver three is Allen Lazard. That's a more pressing need because you have your starting five offensive linemen. Again, whoever you draft at 10 would probably end up playing anyway if they're an offensive lineman. But I think it's definitely not a stretch to say that playmaker is a more pressing need. So, no, obviously, Joe Douglas should not be fired if they don't draft an offensive lineman in the first round.
Man, you guys are cool. He's got you Tyron Smith and Mike Williams, man. Right. You guys are short fuse here.
And Hassan Reddick?
Like. Hassan Reddick. So let's move on to day two, because there's going to be – the Jets only have one day two pick this year. It's high in the third round. They traded their second-round pick, of course, for Aaron Rodgers. But there are a lot of guys. Like Gregory, again, has been very high on Malachi Corley from Western Kentucky. I like him. I think he's probably gone by the third round. He's a Debo Samuel light. I don't love how he basically only ran horizontal stuff where he kind of got the ball going horizontally. But very good athlete, very good hands. Wouldn't be opposed to it, but I don't think he lasts until – 72 overall. So I'm looking at 72 overall. I'm like, who? I believe it's 72.
I think it's 71.
Oh, good call for me. So I'm looking at that. I'm like, all right, let me look at both a playmaker and a lineman, because I feel like they're either going to go playmaker round one, lineman round three, or vice versa. I feel like those are the two picks. Maybe they get a safety, but I don't know. So I'm looking at tight ends. And as you mentioned earlier, there's only four really good ones this year. Sorry, Cade Stover, he just missed out. And one of them is Theo Johnson at Penn State, who did not have the gaudiest numbers. Now, again, Penn State had kind of a weird passing offense. It basically only had Drew Aller throwing like short dump-off stuff, which is weird because he's a five-star recruit with a gigantic bazooka arm. But A lot of dump offs. And that really hurt Johnson because he only had 34 catches for 341 yards. 7 touchdowns, but still. Then he goes to the combine and he's 6'6", 264. And he runs, what, like a 4.7? And he grades out in terms of relative athletic score, RAS. I believe he's like the third or fourth highest tight end in the history of RAS.
Behind Zach.
That's pretty good.
Behind Zach Kuntz.
Behind Zach Kuntz. Is he on the practice squad still?
Well, he's technically on the active roster now, I guess, because there's no practice
squad. He will be on the practice squad. Okay, at least he's still in the organization.
He's fighting with Kenny Eboah right now for tight end 3.
Well, he might be fighting with Theo Johnson soon because some people might have concerns with Bowers about blocking. Theo Johnson blocks his ass off for the entire game. Good hands, good route runner. Again, the production is not really what you want to see. I know you're drafting for tools most of the time, but 60 catches pretty much in all of college is not an amazing number. You probably want to see a little bit more than that. But in terms of just a ball of clay that you can mold into a good tight end if you don't take Bowers at 1, I think Jatavion Sanders is probably A, going to be a round 2 guy, and B, he's almost a wide receiver. He can't block at all. So if you want the more complete tight end guy, I think Theo Johnson's your best bet for that. Excuse me.
Yeah. I think he's definitely someone who's a work in progress, obviously. Not a lot of, the college tape isn't extensive. I don't think he ever had 400 yards in the season. He was not super productive, but when he just blew up the combine, 6'6", whatever he is, 260, and ran like a 4.57 or whatever it was. Dude's a freak. He's an absolute freak.
I don't think you noticed.
Yeah, I don't think he's somebody that is going to play a significant role early in his career, but he's someone that you probably develop as a tight end 2, probably tight end 3 with the Jets, which is fine. There's probably other ways I'd like the Jets to spend a third round pick in a year that they're trying to compete for the Super Bowl, but I like him as a prospect, as a developmental guy, and I think he absolutely could find a home in the NFL. With my day 2 guys, I feel like we've talked about a lot of them, and we've talked so much about the receivers in this class because it is such a freaking good receiver class. Like, it is such a good receiver class. And I want to talk about a guy that I don't think have mentioned very much. That's Ricky Pearsall from Florida. 6'1", 189, ran a 4.41 40-yard dash at the combine. Former Arizona State player. I believe he was teammates with Brandon Ayuk there as well before transferring to Florida.
Jaden Daniels. He was his guy for most of that.
And, of course, Jaden Daniels, of course, before he transferred to LSU. Led Florida in receiving in each of the last 2 seasons, but he never had 1,000 yards in a year. Florida's offense, wasn't the best. Their passing game wasn't great.
Anthony Richardson had to do superhuman things just to complete like an 8-yard pass.
Right, exactly. But I really like Pearsall as a player and as a prospect. I don't think his speed shows up quite as much on tape. I think he's more of a straight line guy, but really good route running, really, really good tracking skills, I think, down the field. And I think that's probably what you're most impressed by. I think some teams probably see him as more of a slot guy, and I believe he played more of the slot at Florida as well. But he is versatile enough to do both. I really like Ricky Pearsall as a potential day 2 pick. I think he's probably going to go maybe in that, second or third round range. I don't think he gets past day 2 at this stage, but really good footwork, really good play speed. I think he's just a very good prospect and just one of the many amazing day 2 receiver prospects. We've talked about a lot of them. Guys like Roman Wilson. I mean, I don't know if Xavier Worthy gets the day 2 at this point, but he's in there. My guy, Ladd McConkey. There are Xavier Leggett. There's so many. Keon Coleman. Not as high on Keon Coleman, but he's definitely one of those guys in that day 2 range. There's so many, and I just wanted to shout out Pearsall because we haven't really talked about him very much.
Pearsall just has the look of a guy who just for his entire career is going to be 60 catches, 700 yards, 6 touchdowns, but every year in and year out, he just consistency every single year. He reminded me a little bit of Josh Reynolds.
He's got that
slender body type who can go downfield, kind of a quick route runner. That's why McVay liked him. That's why the Rams took him. He just kind of has that look to him. I don't think he's as big as Reynolds, but I'm not 100% sure.
He's got that Kenny Stills deep tracking ability too.
Stills was faster though. Stills was more like a track guy.
He was, but I think you can in terms of his deep route running ability and ability to track the ball down the field, I can see it. I think that's going to be a strength of his in the NFL for sure.
And then I'm looking also at another day 3 guy because we were just talking about Troy Fatanu.
Day two,
excuse me. Troy Fatanu. I got to correct myself now, especially as a guy who gets a little granular about pronouncing people's names right. Fautanu. Okay. Another guy who caught my eye. That Washington team was loaded, man.
so
I feel bad for Kalen DeBoer too, because he went to Alabama to replace Saban, and literally all of his assistants left, and he brought his OC, and then he went to go join the Seahawks. I'm like, man, I feel really bad for him, man, because he didn't get a lot of his recruits, but that was such a loaded team. Because not only do they have a good left tackle, Fautanu, but their right tackle was Roger Rosengarten. And he's a guy, I thought I was higher on him than most when I put him as like the 82nd, I think, player on my big board. It's somewhere close to that, like that kind of mid-third round range. I'm like, I really like this guy. Then Mel Kiper puts him at 31. I'm like, whoa. I guess the secret's out on Roger Rosengarten. But kind of, he's almost kind of the opposite of Fautanu in a good way, though, where he's very technically refined, good hand placement. Like you'd want to just take pictures of him and put him in a textbook or like an instructional DVD. Like, here's how you play right tackle. Good choppy footwork, good long arm. I don't love his athletic ability. It's just like okay. It's just passable. And I feel like he was really lacking as a run blocker at times. Like, there were times where he got kind of pushed back a little bit as a run blocker, and they ran mostly to Fautanu's side when they did run with Dylan Johnson. They didn't really go to him, but technically, there's a lot to like about him. Now, if you could just work on kind of splicing some of Fautanu's aggressiveness and Dr. Moreau Frankenstein putting it in his brain, I think you're going to have a really good prospect. A potential more of a true right tackle who could eventually succeed Morgan Moses. And you get an extra year to just throw him behind Moses, learn, and then you go into the offseason saying, all right, either Roger Rosengarten will be ready or we can spend money on a right tackle. So I think that's pretty advantageous.
Yeah, like you said, that Washington team was absolutely stacked. Especially specifically that offense was just ridiculous. I mean, they have three receivers who might go in the first 2 days. They have two offensive tackles who are probably going to go in the first 2 days. It's crazy. I think Rosengarten.
And XL Dylan Johnson might get picked too.
Right, yeah. And I think Rosengarten kind of gets overlooked for that reason. Played, I believe, exclusively right tackle in college. I think he had some practice at left tackle, but only, I believe, played right tackle in games. Technically sound guy. I don't think you see like the nastiness or whatever, the mauling ability that you'd like. Like you mentioned, I think he lacks a little bit as a run blocker, but very sound right tackle prospect. I think he's definitely someone who can honestly, I think he can compete for a starting job early in his career. Probably wouldn't with the Jets, but he's definitely someone you can draft, potentially succeed Morgan Moses as your right tackle. I think he just needs to, I don't even know about get stronger, just kind of play with a meaner mindset, if that makes sense, which sounds like a really silly analysis, but that's kind of the vibe that I get from watching him. I think he's good in pass protection. I think he's fine. I just don't see he's not a finisher. He's not a Taliese Fuaga in that regard. It's very different tape when you're watching those two players. I'm going to talk about another receiver in a bit, but I'll throw out another offensive lineman here because, like you said, Mike, I think that it's very likely that the Jets go either wide receiver day one and an offensive lineman day two or vice versa. I'll talk about a player who I believe you mentioned when we were talking about the Senior Bowl a little bit ago, but that was a while ago. Talking about Dominic Pooney from Kansas. Older prospect. He already turned 24 because they believe he was a D2 transfer. I think he played some ball at D2 before going to Kansas the last 2 years. Very versatile prospect. Started at both left guard and left tackle for Kansas. I believe he has experience at right tackle as well. And I think that versatility is going to be huge for a team like the Jets, that they just need depth around that offensive line, because I like Carter Warren, I guess, a little bit. I like Wes Schweitzer. He's a fine backup, but they really just need depth because there are genuine injury concerns with guys like Tyron Smith, Elijah Vera Tucker, and even Morgan Moses is coming off that shoulder injury. Dominic Pooney started 2 years at Kansas. I think that he is a the versatility is huge with him. I think he's more of that. He's got more of that meaner mindset to him, that like power, more of a raw power guy than a guy like Rosengarten. Probably projects better at guard in the NFL, if I was to say. He's got good length. Like he's 6'5", 313, I think. His arm length isn't bad by any means, but probably would be better off as a guard. I don't know if he can handle like true speedier, or more athletic edge rushers in the NFL, but somebody that I think you draft and develop as a guy who can immediately provide depth and maybe develop into a starter, that'd be fine with me in the third round. Probably second round, if the Jets were to trade back and get a second round pick, might be a little high for him, but I really like him in that like round three, maybe even round four range.
I want to get to another question from Southern Jet on Twitter before we move into our day three, Stevens. Mm-hmm. I like UNC wide receiver Tez Walker.
Yeah.
And he helped ease Mike Williams into back to 100%. We've discussed Tez Walker in the past. He reminds me of a Kenny Stills type, but bigger in that speed guy, vertical, go and get the ball. Like back in the day, you ever go look at old football stats? And you're like, how did this guy average 23 yards a catch in the 1970s? All they had him do was go deep like that. He's not as fast as this guy, but like a Cliff Branch type.
Like Wesley Anderson. Wesley Walker.
Wesley Walker to a degree. Like it's that sort of build. Now the concern obviously is how often are you going to go deep and how often are you going to run more frequent, for lack of a better word, NFL routes. Mm-hmm. Not as good at it. Plus you're really banking on his year at North Carolina, where he only played 7-8 games. Not his fault. He got totally screwed because of NCAA transfer logistics, but not his fault. But there's really not a ton of high level tape for him. It's a lot of Kent State stuff.
Hey, shout out Kent State. Don't be dissing the Golden Flashes.
Don't diss the Golden Flashes where I damn well please.
Don't you dare diss the Golden Flashes. Shout out former head coach Sean Lewis. I believe he was the head coach when Devontae Walker was there.
Now he's at San Diego State, I believe.
I think he came from Syracuse.
He was the OC for Deion Sanders, then he got like fired or like took the play calling away from him like 5 days in, which is dumb for me because his defense sucked and that was the problem, but that's a different conversation.
Right.
As Walker is a guy that I would like getting. He's more of a Mike Williams replacement, but I feel like the Jets might want – like Brian Thomas is a better route runner, so he gives you the route running and the verticality. Walker only gives you the speed and the verticality right now, so he'd be a little raw. I don't know if he'd be a great like year one contributor if that's what the Jets want.
Yeah. I mean, look, I watched him at Kent State. I am a – very, very, very casual Kent State fan. I think I've mentioned this on the podcast before, only because I had an NCAA 14 dynasty with them, and I won a national championship in like 2033 or something with them. So shout out Kent State. Shout out Golden Flashes. He was an awesome player at Kent State, and I do remember watching some of his highlight reel and being like, damn, this dude's pretty good. Didn't really get to watch too much of him in North Carolina last year, but yeah, he's definitely a downfield threat. He ran a 4.36 40-yard dash. Super fast guy. I'd be happy with him. I'd be happy with him as a day two guy for sure.
So moving on to our final segment of the show, we're going to go to day three guys. A guy who might be picked fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh round late in the draft. You're going to think, he's just one of the guys. He's just cannon fodder. He's a camp body. But this guy's different, and he might actually carve out a role. And I'm going to look at a quarterback. And we've discussed some of the later quarterbacks in this draft, you know, Jordan Travis and Joe Milton and Michael Pratt from Tulane. Seems like he's going to be the best of the day three guys. But I went really deep in and I found Devin Leary from Kentucky, who actually is a local guy because he was born in Sicklerville and he went to high school in Gloucester Township at Timber Creek. Sure. So go Chargers. That's South Jersey. So Leary's kind of a weird guy because he has this insane year at NC State in 2021 where he completes 66% of his passes and he throws 35 touchdowns against 5 picks. Tremendous year. Then he gets banged up, only starts like maybe 6-7 games for NC State, transfers to Kentucky, and his completion percentage dropped from 65 to 56. And 2,800 yards, 25 touchdowns, 12 picks. So not as good a year. So I'm like, all right, the entire key to Leary and his entire skill as a prospect, his entire stock, for lack of a better word, is all going to be about how much that 2021 year is the real him and how many coaches think that they can get it out of him. And I'm watching Kentucky and I'm like, you know what? It's fairly obvious that if you put him in the right situation, you can get a lot out of him. Because as you saw, like last year when I was watching Will Levis, I didn't think Will Levis was going to be like a top 10 pick, but I liked his arm and I liked some of the stuff here. I liked him more than like McCarthy this year. I'm like, man, they are just giving this guy nothing. They have no line. It's a very basic offense. They have one receiver who catches half the passes. I'm like, this isn't good at all. And they kept a lot of that this year. I mean, he had no line. He didn't really have receivers. He had Ray Davis, a good running back, but in the passing game, they didn't really have much. And he was still able to make plays on the move. He's not a big guy. He's like 6'1", maybe 210, but he's got that kind of baseball player whippy arm where you can just contort it and fire it into weird angles. Like it's always funny to me how guys can just be 6'1", 190 and gun a baseball, and then a guy could be 6'5", 240 and throw like a softball. Leary's got that very elastic arm. You want him to go downfield? Hell yeah, he can go downfield. He just, when he gets time. Now, obviously, when he gets panicked, there's obviously problems, but everybody has problems when they get panicked. And also, like, the arm is good. It's good. But it's not great, so I think that'll knock him down a little bit. But if you want to just take a day three developmental prospect, a lot worse than you can do than Devin Leary. Because that 2021 NC State year where he was so great, I think that's still in there.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it before. With any day three quarterback prospect, there's going to be obvious serious flaws. Because if they didn't have these flaws, they wouldn't be going day three, especially if they're a quarterback. Leary, the flaws are obvious. I mean, one, he turns 25, I believe, in September. So he's already
10th, yeah, so yeah. Older guy, too.
He's already a rookie. Right, so he's already a very old prospect. I mean, he played like 4 or 5 years at NC State before he transferred. But yeah, that 2021 season, I think a lot of teams are going to look at and be like, how can we possibly replicate this? Because his tape at Kentucky last year was not great. Like, very inconsistent accuracy. I think that specifically throwing outside the numbers was really a problem for him. And also kind of, I feel like, again, I think I said this about somebody else, but he struggles with Baker Mayfield's system or syndrome where he doesn't know how to not throw 95 miles per hour. Like, he just kind of zips it in there all the time. And it's weird with his throwing motion is so weird. But I think that that's definitely, you know, that's definitely a problem with him, but got a really good arm. I also don't think that he's like, he's not a statue back there. Like, this isn't, he's not a Carter Bradley. Athleticism is never going to be his strength, but he can extend plays. He can create out of schedule, which is something that you want to look for from a day three quarterback prospect that has some kind of developmental upside. But I, again, he's a day three quarterback prospect. I don't expect much of him at the NFL level. And the fact that he's older makes his developmental upside a little bit lower, but you saw what he did in 2021 with NC State. I think there was some things to like about what he did last year with Kentucky, even if the turnovers were a big problem, not only interceptions, but I believe he has pretty significant fumble issues as well throughout his college career. So those will obviously have to come down, but sure, as a day three guy, it's fine. I think I'd still prefer like a Michael Pratt maybe, or like a Jordan Travis. I think those are more, maybe even more likely for the Jets to go that route, but Devin Leary is fine. If they took him round five, even round six, cool. I'd be fine with that. The guy I'm going to talk about, and I wanted to focus on a running back, and my favorite day three running back is a player that I believe I talked about last week or very recently, and that's Audric Estime. So I'm not going to talk about him again because we've already talked about him. But another guy I really like, and somebody who I think has the potential to be a lot better of a pro player than he was in college, and that's Isaac Garendo out of Louisville. He wasn't even Louisville's number one running back last year.
Jawar Jordan was.
Yes, that was Jawar Jordan. And he was their leading rusher. He was their starting running back or whatever. So it's very interesting to talk about this guy. I like him a lot better than Jordan as a prospect. And I think a lot of NFL teams will agree. He turns 24 in June, but he does not have a lot of mileage on his
tires,
legs, or yeah, thank you. He does not have a lot of carries in his career. He transferred from Wisconsin to Louisville this past season. He only had more than 100 carries this one season. He was barely used before that. It was more of just kind of a rotational guy. 6 foot, 221, and he ran a 4.33 40-yard dash. And I think when he did that at the combine, a lot of teams kind of sat up and were like, oh, shoot, he's got that speed too, because I don't think that speed necessarily shows up on tape as much. I think when he gets in open space, it does. He's more of like a straight line guy. And I think that's, one of the things you got to keep in mind when you look at his size speed blend and you're like, oh my goodness, how is this guy not, a top 50 guy? And that's why. I think he's at his best once he kind of just builds up and gets going. But the reason that I love him so much as a prospect too, because I think he's a really good pass catcher and a really good pass blocker. Which, in Wisconsin, they definitely instill that in their running backs. A lot of Wisconsin running backs coming out tend to be pretty good run blocker or pass blockers. And I don't think Garendo is any different. I think he's somebody that can come in and fill a role for the Jets. Again, I think I prefer Estime for that role as that more short yardage guy. I don't know if Garendo is necessarily that kind of a player. Obviously, he's faster.
They tried to do that a little bit, but yeah. It seemed like they just went with the hot hand most of the time at Louisville.
Right. Him and Jordan were an interesting blend together, but I do really like him as a prospect. I think he's someone who absolutely can be a much better player and much more productive player in the NFL. And despite his age, and normally you want to stay away from older running back prospects, it's really just it comes down to how many carries you have. Like, look at a guy like Raheem Mostert. He's 30, 31 and playing the best football of his career because he barely played early in his career. Meanwhile, a guy like Dalvin Cook was washed by 27 because he was running to the ground. So I don't really look at the age as much as how much mileage you got in your tires. Garendo does not have a lot of mileage on his tires, and I think that he can be a very good player in the NFL. Not my favorite day three running back prospect, but definitely one of my top options if the Jets go that route. Plus, also, he was a former track guy too, so there's the speed.
Well, I was about to say the concern would be that he would be a little Theo Johnson-y, which is my fear with him, which is how much of it is just underwear Olympics and how much of it's actually going to translate to football. mm-hmm. as opposed to wearing, you know, skin tight pants and running in the air conditioned. What is it now? Not the Edward Jones Dome. That's St. Louis. Lucas Oil. That's the Colts play.
Yes.
The Edward Jones Dome. Look at this old geriatric grandpa talking about the St. Louis Rams.
I don't even know what that is. I've never heard
that's
of
where
that.
The Rams played.
Oh, okay.
In St. Louis.
Cool.
Know your history.
I shouted out Wesley Walker before, right? I know my history. You are an encyclopedia of football knowledge.
They just packed it up for the what were they, the Battle Hawks?
Yeah, St. Louis.
That place was pumped. 40,000 people.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Okay.
It's St. Louis a team, man.
Yeah, it's a great city.
Jeez. So now that we're talking about St. Louis, I think it's time to call time on this episode of the Jet Press, talking about the New York Jets. My two guys, one guy is from Jersey and Pennsylvania, another guy from Long Island. Let's get rid of the St. Louis talk. And let's just say thank you guys for tuning in. As always, you can find us on Apple, Spotify, Overcast, wherever you get your podcasts. We're on all those sites, YouTube, at the Jet Press, subscriptions, likes. They all really help. Justin, take us home.
I want to quickly shout out, because I was going to mention him as another day three guy, but I didn't get a chance to. Shout out Cole Burgess from SUNY Cortland. I was going to say my alumni, but I'm an alumni of or alumnus of SUNY Cortland. Whatever, my alma mater, that's the word. Shout out Cole Burgess. I believe he made.
I don't know what the value of a Cortland degree then is if you couldn't get alma mater from.
Whoa. First you take a shot at Kent State. Now you're taking a shot at Cortland.
I'll take a shot at Siena because I went to Marist. Do you know how you get a Siena grad off your doorstep?
How do you do it? Is this a joke? What is, I'm confused.
You pay for your pizza.
I don't even understand that joke. I don't even, is that.
Dude, because the Siena grad's working as the pizza delivery guy. Dude.
Oh, okay. Good one. That was really funny.
Again, Mike. Cortland coming in. I don't know.
Bill Burgess, 6 foot, 192, ran a 4.45. He has a chance to get drafted. And if he's not drafted, or if he is drafted, you know what? That's what I want. When the Jets are on the board, Mr. Irrelevant, if it's not Cole Burgess from SUNY Cortland, I will be upset. Unless they sign him as an undrafted free agent, then I'll be happy again. But that's fine. Anyway, until next
time. Maybe he'll make it. The only time when I was at Marist, we had only one guy. I remember his name was Justin Christian. And he signed as an undrafted free agent with the Ravens because he was from there. And I don't think he obviously didn't make it. I think he went to the Calgary Stampeders for a bit. But
okay.
I believe he led the country in yards per catches last year. He was – really fast. So
there was a Cortland guy, Jake Ceresna. I believe he made it to the NFL, or he signed. He was at the training camp with the Jets. I think he might have been with the Patriots. I forget. But Cole Burgess is legit. Shout out D3 national champs, Cortland Red Dragons. Let's go. Also, keep an eye out on the channel. We might have some draft interviews coming up over the next 2 weeks. We had a lot of those last year. It was really fun because we got to speak with Jarque Bernard Converse like a week and a half before the draft. And then he ended up getting drafted by the Jets. So there's a very decent chance that might happen again. We'll hopefully have a few of those going up on the channel. Probably have more updates next week on that. Might even have some before then. We'll see. But until then and until next time, thank you all for joining us on the show today. You can follow Mike on Twitter at @ByMikeLuciano. Follow me on Twitter at @JustinT3. Follow the Jet Press at the Jet Press. Download the Jet Press podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Check us out on YouTube and TikTok. Subscribe, like, hit that notification bell. You guys know what to do. We stream live every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Thank you all for listening to Jet Press Podcast. I have been Justin Freed. That has been Mike Luciano. See you guys next time.
See you folks next week as the draft keeps coming closer.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.